Might have been deemed to be rescued.
It was excellent. That was a, I wish I had that quote exactly.
Okay, let's get started. Welcome to the city council meeting for May 2nd, 2023. I'm Mayor Horrocks. Welcome to our visitors. All council members are present. We'll start with a thought or prayer and pledge of allegiance by council member Van Langeveld.
Thank you, Mayor. The thought I want to share today came from the League of Cities and Towns conference that we were at last week, and one of the keynote addresses by Tim Shriver, who talked about dignity and the return to dignity in public discourse. And some of you were there, I know, and we've talked about it together, but I know some of you weren't, and I would like to share with anyone else here. This Dignity Index project is a project looking at the way we talk, so in communication in public discourse, which demonstrates a trend toward what they identified as contempt, and that in the presence of contempt, not a lot of good decisions can happen. And the research looked at specific words and phrases and that people would say, and had less to do with the individuals and their individual character, but more in the way they would speak in their discussions. The Dignity Index rates conversation on a scale of 1 to 8, with 1 being the most abhorrent and 8 being the most dignified. And the marker of how you moved along that scale was the presence or absence of contempt on the low end and then dignity on the high end, with the idea that those are the flip of each other, with dignity recognizing the inherent value of every individual and they deserve to be treated well and respected, and contempt showing a disgust and anger towards that person. So for those of you that know, social science is my field, and contempt is something that I've studied many times, and the research on contempt identifies it as a complicated emotion that includes not just anger about a particular topic, but disgust for the human that is sharing that. And that tends to shift how we talk about things. It's not just that we disagree, it's not just that what you say makes me angry, but I actually think you're a terrible human and not of as much value or deserving of as much respect as me. And that is what makes it so dangerous, because it's so hard to have any healthy debate in that space. So the Dignity Index and this organization has sent out a call for those of us that work in public office to take what they call the Dignity Pledge, and this is what it is, and I'll just read that as the close of my thought. The Dignity Pledge says, "There is no America without democracy, no democracy without healthy debate, and no healthy debate without dignity. Therefore, I pledge to do more to treat others with dignity and not with contempt." And I am grateful here in North Salt Lake and in my interactions, I think we do an exceptionally good job of being respectful and showing dignity, and I'm grateful for that. But one thing I liked about this pledge is it simply says, I'll do more. At whatever level we're at, I'll do more. And that's the thought I'd like to share. Now, for the pledge, I've invited a guest, Ryan Holbrook, who is a member of our planning commission, will lead us in the pledge. Ryan has lived in North Salt Lake for 7 years. He lives in Eaglewood Village with his wife and his 2-year-old, and Ryan runs engineering firm, WTR Engineering, and he's been on the Planning Commission and doing a fantastic job there for the last several years. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you. If you'll follow me in the pledge. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ryan and Elisa. I thought Tim Shriver's comments were excellent as well, and just a lot to think about from that. Next item is citizen comment. If there's anyone here that would like to address the council, please come forward, state your name and address.
Hello, council. Ryan Holbrook, 203 East Northview Way. My citizen comment is in regards to the North Salt Lake Monday food trucks. They just started this week. My wife and I really enjoy that night off at the food trucks to not have to plan a dinner. It's been a great thing to, as a backup for a family. Last year, the Juneteenth food truck event paid significant attention to us that we made sure to attend. I understand that there might be options in the future to have more focused Monday night events like that for different groups. I would just like to voice my support for that. That even it gives more significance. It's doesn't seem like a very large burden on the city. And there's lots of Mondays through the summer that I don't feel like anyone could be excluded. So that's my citizen comment.
Thank you. Anyone else have a comment? Okay. Next item is consideration of plat amendment for Eaglewood 13 development, combining the Eaglewood Cove subdivision phase 13 lots, 13, 17, and 18, and vacating the public easement. Sherry.
Thank you. So this is in the new Eaglewood Cove phase 13. This is two lots. So lot 13, 18 is actually a flag lot. The purchasers of these lots, 1317 is directly in front of the flag lot, 1318, wishes to combine those two lots into one lot. The property line that was that exists right now between the two lots actually contains a public utility easement, and thus the need for them to not combine these by a simple lot line adjustment. They have to do it by a plat amendment to vacate the public utility easement. The Planning Commission has held a public hearing on that last week. We received one comment from South Davis Sewer District who said they had no objection to the vacation of this public utility easement. So we appreciated that they got our letter and they actually responded. One of the things I want you to know about this particular combination is that all of the same conditions of Eaglewood Cove 13 that we had on the original plats, those notes still are in play. In fact, there was some minor red line corrections that have actually been corrected now. They had kind of changed some of the outline numbering, and so I had given them some corrections on that, and we received those on Friday or late Thursday night. And some of the planning red lines have been corrected. But we wanted to make sure that you're aware that they are still bound by the full geotechnical review and the full analysis for these lots. They still have to do all the same things that every other lot does. We put all of the pertinent notes that relate to these type of lots on this plat so that they can't get lost. Nobody can say they didn't get them or have the opportunity to review what the restrictions are on these lots. As part of doing the combinational lot, we had to establish a new building envelope. So we asked for a site-specific topography showing us the areas that were over 30% slope. We have adjusted those lot, that building envelope to that edge, and it happens to correspond also very nicely with the scrub oak line, and so none of that will be disturbed on the hillside above this parcel. The Planning Commission did make a favorable recommendation on this plat amendment, again with the condition that any of these minor red line engineering corrections and the planning corrections had been taken care of. I believe the ones for the engineering have to do with the rotation and the NAD 83 language, and we're having the city attorney review those before the Mylar is printed so that it can be recorded correctly. Davis County has some new rules on how we note those on our plats, and so we're trying to get that language worked out with Lael up there at the county, but we appreciate you considering this. And we have Mr. Baird here if you have any questions for him. He's the builder.
Sherry, can I ask a quick question?
Yes.
So the buildable area still is not allowed to go over that easement, right?
So the easement will be vacated as part of recording this plat.
Okay, so the buildable area will get bigger, and then will we move the easement somewhere else?
Yes, so the easement on the new plat is located on the side property lines. So on this one, it shows it a little bit better. We chose the hatched area is the public utility easement that's being vacated. And then you can see that there's a public utility easement on right there, right there.
Great. That was my question. Thank you.
Any further questions?
I
would like a motion.
I move that City Council approve the plat amendment combining Eaglewood Cove subdivision phase 13 lots 13 and 1317 lot 1318 and vacating a public utility easement on the property located at 1363 East Wood Oak Loop with the following conditions, corrections of engineering and planning red lines.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's do a roll call.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Thank you, Sherry. Next item is John. And is it really like HA5 or HA5?
It's HA5. No, it's HA5. Which really just stands for Holbrook Asphalt, and the 5 is the 5-year warranty that they put on it.
Awesome.
So. There you go. All right. It is true. All right. So tonight, a bid consideration for Holbrook Asphalt to do HA5 asphalt preservation on the following roads here in the annex area. When we surveyed these roads before the annexation happened, these roads are actually in great condition, and we want to keep them that way. So they fell right into our preservation schedule. So we just like to get those preserved as soon as possible. But the budget for this project will come out of the allocations from the C Road funds from the state. So for $57,497.73.
Any questions on this?
I have a really dumb question, Mayor. What, I can't tell, the dead end streets, are they running up to the next to the streets? Where's the dead ends? Are these the cul-de-sacs?
Yeah, the cul-de-sacs, like the 900 West Street, just kind of dead ends. There's really not a cul-de-sac on that one. And then there's a section there on 4100 South that is scheduled to be rebuilt, so we didn't include that as part of the preservation project.
Okay.
John, do we not need to get bids because the quality of this product is...
Yeah, they're a sole source provider for this product.
Okay. I just... I was in another situation where there was a bid from Holbrook and it was higher, and I convinced everyone to take it. So I just wanted to make sure that it wasn't something comparable to something that would be less expensive.
If I can just jump in, what we've been continuously reviewing products that other people are purporting is or equal, and when one becomes available or has a reasonable number of years of history, like more than two, then we'll obviously open it to a public bid.
I just appreciate that we're not opening it to a public bid because I think this is the best way to do it.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Motion.
Yeah.
I move the City Council approve the bid award for the HA5 high density mineral bond for $57,497.73 to Holbrook Asphalt.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? Alisa?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. John, I've got one question for you while I'm just thinking about it.
Sure.
Right out where we were planting trees the other day, there was about a 2-inch gap in that parking lot.
Yes.
That
we're planning on renting a mastic sealer later in the year, and we're going to fill those gaps in.
Okay. Or we could fill it and have a swimming pool there.
Yeah. We've tried to put crack seal in it. It just keeps, the crack seal just disappears. So yeah. The mastic will work a little bit better.
Okay. Well, then, since you answered that correctly, we'll go on to the next item. Consideration of a change order and award of bid for synthetic softball turf installation.
All right. So this is part of the project that for the Stonehenge Caleb and Oldham Park. Currently, they have engineered softball material that's the wood bark on the playground. All this needs to be removed for the construction of the new playground installations. And just to kind of go with our what we've been doing with that new softball turf material, we'd like to place this turf under these playgrounds since a lot of the work has to be done anyways to remove that bark. So we contacted Sontag about got a change order price for this, and the way that breaks down, this is the kind of the spend down of that account that it would come from out of the replacement budget. So we have the tennis court and the playground replacements, that's committed funds already. And then the synthetic turf kind of fits in there too. So you can see that how the funding's going for this, where the funding's coming from. So like I said, Sontag Recreation gave us this bid. And since these parks are all like equal size, the price was equal for all of them. So that's $74,850.
I have a question. I know that there's a very extensive plan of replacement throughout the parks. Did these three just come up in the list, or were they pushed to the front of the list because there were problems in those parks?
The playground replacements?
Yeah.
They fell into that replacement plan.
It was just part of this.
Yeah.
And so the other pocket parks around there will come up in the next couple
yes.
years or so. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And then the next one we're working on is Mathis Park.
So. Great.
Any further questions? Motion?
I'll move that the City Council approve the change order for synthetic softball turf installation at Caleb, Oldham, and Stonehenge Pocket Parks to Sontag Recreation for $74,850.
Second.
Motion and a second. Any further discussion? Ted?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Thank you, John.
Thanks.
Next item is consideration of Resolution 2023-19R, resolution adopting the fiscal year 23-24 tentative budget and setting a public hearing date.
Thank you, Mayor. This is something that is, this action you're going to take on this tentative budget is something that's required by state law. The first council meeting in May, you're required to consider and adopt a tentative budget for the upcoming fiscal year. You were, as a reminder, you're not adopting the final budget, but this resolution will do a couple of things. It will put the tentative budget on public display for the public to review and consider and prepare themselves for a public hearing, which is the second purpose of the resolution, and that public hearing will be set when you adopt the resolution for June 20th. And so as we prepared this item, we have put together essentially the same budget that you reviewed and were presented in the budget retreat that we held last month. And there are some changes that we can, some minor changes from the retreat to now that we can go over with you. We're prepared to do that today. As a reminder, and without going into too much detail, because this isn't really a budget presentation, this tentative budget has proposals for three part-time crossing guard positions. Those are new positions that we would add to the city. We're not proposing to add any full-time positions in the upcoming budget year. And there's also some increases in some of our operational costs, including an increase in our South Davis Metro Fire District assessment, which is happening to all five cities and the county. We have an increase of 7.8% in our health insurance premium for the upcoming year. And we're proposing, as a reminder to the council, a 6% cost of living adjustment in this upcoming budget, which we haven't taken action on. You will be taking action on that on June 20th. And I would just invite the council between now and then, if you have more questions or you want to have more detail. Some of you have asked me for more detail, and we're preparing that for you. And so we've made note of that, and we'll present that to you between now and then. But otherwise, that's the proposal in the resolution. I guess I'd just ask Heidi, maybe you want to walk us through the table of minor changes between the last time we looked at this and now. Please, thank you.
Thank you. Yep, that is it. I know I had it hidden because I wasn't sure if we were going to discuss it. So they are minor. They total just a little over $40,000. The first item is increase in the elections budget in between the time of the retreat document preparation, and now we've got the bid from the county. So an increase of $8,000 to that line item. Recognizing the grant portion of the project for the general plan, recognizing that revenue of $90,000. Contract payments increase also of $90,000. So increased revenue, increased expense, recognizing just that grant portion of the project. So no net increase or use of fund balance there. Professional and technical services for economic development. This was a request to increase this budget item for the town center market study. In personnel services of the Justice Court, this is for the judge. We did receive some documentation from the administrative office of the courts that sets the judges, a part-time judge's minimum wages and or minimum salary, I guess you could say. And that came in, I want to say, sometime last week. So we need to increase that amount by $2,200. And then an increase to the professional and technical budget for the prosecution also under the court as a request through the Davis, the folks that we use as our prosecutors who also work for Davis County. And we're looking at doing some contracts with those. One of the things that they want to do is charge some of their time out to an administrative assistant because their caseload has increased and they are short. I think they've had one person who's taken a judgeship. So that was the reason for that increase. And then cleanup on the wrap tax debt service principal is actually going to be the $296,000 instead of the $633,000 in interest. We just had numbers flip-flopped in that area. So for net overall increase of $4,800. So those were the changes. And they're reflected in the budget documents that are in your packets tonight. So they're slightly different than the bound document that was presented at the budget retreat. Were there any questions?
As the does the election number assume a primary?
It does.
Okay. So it's possible that that number could be halved. Any questions on this? Thank you, Heidi.
Thank you.
It was June 20th
on the public hearing. By statute, we have to adopt the budget by June 22nd. We put the hearing at that time because we believe by then we'll also have the property tax rate given to us by Davis County. Okay. So we'll know what that is.
All right. Did you have anything else
no.
to present?
I'll make a motion.
Okay.
Thank you for all of the work. I know this reflects extensive work. I move the City Council approve Resolution 2023-19R, a resolution adopting the tentative budget for fiscal year 2024 and setting a public hearing date.
I'll second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. Let's start with Elisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That motion passes. Next item is consideration of ordinance 2023-06, amending the city code title 9, chapter 1, section 3, on retaining walls, of all things.
Of all things this year. So, as you know, we've had some issues with retaining walls as part of our continuing effort to elevate our review of these things and reevaluate our ordinances and find where there are places that we can make better. We have identified a few things in Title IX that pertain to retaining walls that we would like to recommend for code amendment. So I've outlined here basically what those things are. The first would be to require a minimum a land use permit for all retaining walls. There's some confusion in our code where it says under the building code statute in Title IX that says anything under 4 feet in height does not require a building permit. And that's technically true under the building code. But it's not true if that property is in a restricted area, a sensitive lands area, geologic hazards area. And so we wanted to clarify that and make it as easy as possible. So we came up with the idea that let's have every retaining wall have a land use permit. We don't charge any fees for review of land use permits. So if you're just doing a little landscaping wall in your front yard, we can review it. We know that it's not in a public utility easement. We know that it's not over 4 feet in height. And we can simply issue that over the counter. If we get the land use permit in and we're like, oh, wait, this is in the sensitive lands over area, or this is on a slope greater than 30%, or some other geologic hazard exists on that lot, then we can elevate that and it becomes more apparent to us at the before the retaining wall is put in instead of after them putting it in without a building permit. So we wanted to get that in there to catch that. The second thing we needed to do was just to clarify the retaining wall height measurements, that it's from the bottom of finished grade to the top of the wall rather than from the footing. We wanted to put a reference in there to Title 10, Chapter 12, the geologic hazards, to make it perfectly clear of when you had to go and do a geologic hazards review on a retaining wall, what the circumstances were for that. We needed some clarification on what site plan requirements would be for a building permit, not for necessarily a land use permit, but that we needed some topography. Some of the retaining wall plans that we were getting in from homeowners and builders could have been built, drawn on, and probably were drawn on napkins. And so we really needed to have some standards in there that said this is what the minimum thing should have on our site plans so that we can identify where the hazards are and that it's being properly designed and constructed. We also wanted a criteria put in there for height exceptions. We've done height exceptions as part of subdivisions before to go over the maximum height of retaining walls, but we wanted to establish what those height exceptions should be, and they should only be after they've been adequately reviewed for geologic hazards and that there's some special circumstances or that they are a safer design to go over that height. And then to clarify a required distance between a retaining wall and a building, that wasn't very clear in our code, so we wanted to make sure that was placed in there. And then also just to reiterate, our code in general has the statement that the more restrictive regulation applies, but we wanted to remind people that if the restrictions in the sensitive lands overlay zone were more restrictive than the restrictions in the building code for the construction of a retaining wall, that it was the more restrictive ordinance that applied. The next steps after this is adopted, if you are so willing to do that for us, then we will be updating our website with information about retaining wall regulations and permitting and doing a public outreach campaign so that we let people know that we're trying to make this an easier process that protects them and their property and also their neighbor's property, because that's ultimately our goal. If you have any technical questions about the stuff that's in this ordinance, I will refer those to our city engineer who we've worked very closely with on drafting this ordinance amendment.
Does this include any language for the rock retaining walls?
There is already some rockery retaining wall regulations in there, yes.
Okay, so it applies to them, just
yes.
like it would to
rain. They are retaining okay. wall, yes.
So I have a neighbor who lives in the flatlands, like I do, who's tearing his front yard to kind of make it more water-wise. So it's got like 2 bricks high of those bricks that you just buy at Lowe's. Is that that counts as a retaining wall, and he would need to have you look at it?
Yeah, and those ones will be the easiest ones to look over. That's pretty much an over-the-counter permit when we know where we're at in Foxborough. We just don't want to miss anybody who's doing something that they think is under 4 feet when maybe it's like 6 feet and it's up on the hillside. The easy ones will be the ones in Foxborough for that very reason.
And that would be part of the outreach campaign, just letting
yes.
people know. If you're doing this cute thing to your garden, make sure to come and double check.
Yeah, and then we make sure that it's not in a public utility easement or it's not too close to a sidewalk so that they don't have to move it later when we find out that it's, you know, in violation of our ordinance.
Thank you.
So that brings up a good question, though. She's talking about a 2-foot retaining wall. What is the minimum height that you'd consider a retaining wall?
There is no minimum defined. So the problem that we've had, and it's intentional, if you have a 1 or a 2 foot wall and it is in a location, for example, I just showed you pictures of a 69% slope. If they cut in and put in a 1 foot wall, it could cause a slope failure.
What if it's like 1 brick thick?
Then that would just be a curb.
Okay.
I have a question about specifically what... Natalie brought up in Foxborough, in the definition, a retaining wall is intended to stop the lateral move of earth. When the ground is flat and you build a wall for a planter box, is that a retaining wall or is it just a planter box?
Well, you're putting dirt behind it and it's holding that dirt back, so it technically meets the definition of a retaining.
So I'm just wondering, but the number of people who would have that kind of a retaining wall versus the number of people who would have the 1 foot on a 69% slope, I don't know if those would be in proportion to the amount of work it's going to take residents and engineering staff to review retaining walls that are...
So some of it is the land management permit could be as simple as somebody calls and says, hey, I'm putting in a gardening bed. Do I need... No, it's a square. It's the whole thing's raised. You're not retaining any natural slopes of any kind. 99.9% of people in Foxborough will not need any kind of review, including drawing much of a site plan. Now, that does not mean that there are some retaining walls in Foxborough, and there is some grade changes that occur. And those can be handled almost exclusively through this land management permit. It will be reviewed by planning at no cost. There's no engineer plans. They can draw it on a napkin. They can draw it with a marker on a Google Earth photo. We just need to know what they're doing. There have been a number of cases where residents have said, wait, but the code said I only need a permit if it's over 4 feet tall because they didn't read the other part of our code. And that's what we're trying to correct.
And I think that definitely needs to be corrected as well, but I am concerned at the amount of work on people that are not at risk of creating any concerns, that any work on a, you know, planter box in Foxborough needs to be there. And then I have a second question, though. What about building a pond, building something lower? So you're now using something to retain the land so that you have a space below grade. Is this included in this code, or do we have any code regarding that?
For a pond?
Or something where you're digging lower so that you're retaining the earth, but for something below what the grade originally was. Does that make sense?
So if you're doing retainage for anything below ground, it's also covered, but a typical retaining wall wouldn't be applicable to something like a pond.
Or a trampoline pit.
Right. Would that be something that would have to get a building permit or a land use review?
So typically if you have something that is... centrally contained. So for example, I used to live in Foxborough and I had a nice planter that went around a tree and raised it all 2 bricks high. I wasn't retaining anything but soil and bark to go around the tree I had just planted. Similar conditions, if you are on a slope in a yard that is flat and doesn't have any grade restrictions, and you dig a hole for a trampoline, you're not retaining anything but the hole around. That sounds very simple. If the edge of that trampoline is 3.5 feet from a grade break, it's perfectly flat, and 3.5 feet it's a grade break and it slopes, and 30 feet behind that you hit a hillside that goes up and up and up, and that trampoline pit just cut the toe of the slope, which could create a landslide. We want to see that so that we can say, resident one, you're great. We don't need anything. Here's your permit. And resident two, you're risking a landslide. If you're going to put this here, you need a geotech study. So the application is never as simple as always yes or always no. And that's why we're taking on the idea of looking at all of them, because many, many, we can say, you're good, you're good, you're good. We want to catch that one that could create a catastrophe.
So in the examples that you just gave, the trampoline, in-ground trampoline, and the retaining wall around the tree, both of those would, into this code, would require a review?
The trampoline would, because you're cutting potentially into the ground, where if you're doing a flat area where you're raising a contained circle around a tree, would not.
So if you're adding soil into a retaining wall, even if it's 2 feet tall, but you've added it in, that does not require a review?
If it's a circular structure around a tree where it's uniform, it doesn't require a review, because then it's a planter box.
It's not holding a slope, so if there's a slope behind
it. So holding earth is okay, but not the slope.
Correct. If you've
got it. So almost nothing in Foxborough would be holding a slope.
Pretty much.
Yeah, thank you.
Do you distinguish, I'm thinking about a 4 foot, like if you have a series of runs that go over 4 feet, is that considered over 4 feet?
It is. So the rule is anytime that you have a tiered structure or a terraced retaining wall is what we call it. So if you have a 4 foot wall, and then you have a 2 foot wall, and then you have another 4 foot wall. Depending on the space between, what you actually have is a 10 foot wall. And the rule is you have to have twice, the land area between has to be twice the height of the tallest wall. And if they're not more than twice the height away, so a 10 foot wall and an 8 foot wall would be 18, you'd have to have 32 feet between them, or they're interactive. So the idea is if the back wall, a 10 and an 8 would have to be 20 apart, pardon me, twice the height of the tallest wall. If they're 18 feet apart, they interact and it's a single wall. If they're 22 feet apart, they're separate walls.
Does it make sense to include a definition of retaining wall in the ordinance?
We have a definition of retaining wall in there.
Oh, I didn't see that definition.
I don't know if it's in this section, but I believe it is. I might not just, retain, it's B, it's the first
retaining wall. 9.1.3B.
Okay, any further questions? You want to make a motion, anyone?
I'll make a motion. I can't hold it back any longer.
Channeling your inner Commissioner Kirkham.
His inner retaining wall.
I move that the City Council approve Ordinance 2023-06, amending City Code 9, Title 9, Section 3, pertaining to the construction of retaining walls, with the following findings. One, the proposed amendments improve regulations related to the construction of retaining walls for the protection of the health, safety, and welfare of the citizens of North Salt Lake, and two, changing conditions make the proposed amendment reasonably necessary to carry out the purposes stated in this title.
Second.
Thank you. Any further discussion? Let's start with Ted.
Aye.
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 Thank you.
Thank you. That passed unanimously, even though Lisa didn't have her mic on. Next item, consideration of approval of polling locations and vote centers for the 2023 municipal elections. Wendy?
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This is a really easy item tonight. And the reason it's before you is because statutorily the municipal legislative body is to approve the election day polling locations in the jurisdiction that you reside over and the vote centers throughout Davis County. So on the screen, and also I left a letter that Davis County had prepared with the list of the vote centers throughout the county, and they've designated North Salt Lake City Hall as the polling location for this jurisdiction. And I recommend that the City Council approve North Salt Lake City Hall as the election day polling location for the City of North Salt Lake, and also approve the designated vote centers throughout the county as outlined for the 2023 municipal election. Do you have any questions?
I'll make a motion, Mayor. I move the City Council approve the North Salt Lake City Hall as election day polling location in the City of North Salt Lake, and also approve the designated vote centers throughout Davis County as outlined for the 2023 municipal elections.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Let's start with Elisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes.
Thank you.
I was having that memory of a 12-year-old in Mutual. We'd go play basketball, except Tuesday elections, they used to vote in the LDS chapels, and that was really annoying to a young man trying to play basketball. But. Okay, we've done the minutes. Action items? Are there any questions or updates on the action items?
I didn't see the form-based code as an action item, but I wonder if it ought to be. And is there any update on the timing on that?
I don't have any particular update on the form-based code. We wanted to talk to you and the council at a later date to kind of reevaluate where we're going with the form-based code in light of our general plan update and possibly some of the discussions that you've had about hiring an architect to help us with the town center design. And so I'm still formulating that plan, and I will get back with you shortly.
Okay. Can we still add it as an action item to keep track of it?
We'll put it on the action items.
And I just have a minor item. I don't know if it needs to be added to the action list or just make note. We really need a dog potty basket up on, at Tunnel Springs Park just as you come off the trail. Right now there's no place to put your dog waste except walking all the way to the parking lot in the park, and I think a lot of people are too lazy to do that. So.
Okay.
That park gets used a lot.
It was packed. We were up there last night, and there was no parking room any place. Both sides of the little road was packed. The parking lot in the back was packed. The other parking lot was packed. A lot of people. And it's beautiful this time of year. Everything's green up there.
Yeah. It was a long winter. Everyone's gone down.
They were excited to get out and get pictures. Everybody had cameras, and we had fun up there visiting.
Okay. Let's go to council reports. We'll start with Ted.
Okay, just a reminder that the Kite Festival is on May 6th. At 9 at Tunnel Springs, and also that the Golden Spoke Ride is on May 13th. We will begin that ride at noon, so if you are interested in doing the ride, get there a little bit earlier than that. That is at, I always get the name wrong, it's so embarrassing, Foxborough Regional, which is
Legacy.
Legacy, which is actually called Legacy. Mm-hmm. And it's, I've just mentally broken that I always get the name wrong.
Splashback Park.
And we'll be riding north to Farmington Regional. And back. And those, anyway, so I'm happy to answer questions on either of those or tell you that I don't know the answer, if that's the case, which is probably more likely. And then I'll just note that in our budget retreat, Ken mentioned the really good idea of possibly looking at the urban design, how development, parking, landscaping might unfold in the town center, those kinds of questions. I think that's a great idea. And I just wanted to note that I think if we start to hatch out an approach to going through that kind of, let's call it a charrette process, that I would encourage that also look at parking questions as well.
Thank you, Ted. I'll just say that there's only one day a year that the wind is not blowing at Tunnel Springs Park, and that's when we have the Kite Festival.
There were people flying kites last night up there. Yeah. So.
Lisa?
Thanks for all those people who did Arbor Days. It looked like there was a huge turnout. That's wonderful to see. Sadly, I have to report I have to cut down my sycamore tree, which is as old as my oldest son because it's dying. It's a big tree, so that's going down next week.
What would Pocahontas say about cutting down the sycamore tree?
But we're saving some of the burl in there for people who like to use it for... Anyway, that's really going to be sad. The other thing is I do... If you'll write to me if you have thought of it, I have to do a panel presentation on Friday morning at the Utah Municipal Attorneys Association. And I don't know if you read that email, but if any of you have any suggestions of what, as an elected, you expect of your city attorney, please send that to me. I will keep you anonymous, but I'd like to know what your perspective might be. Okay?
Thank you. Ted?
Mayor Horrocks, I forgot the item that I wanted to get some opinion back from the council on, and I think our attorney can help me if I overstep. We have signaled to the city, namely, especially our new annexation area, that we have an intention as a council to look at the address change question in the future. We signaled to them that our intention is we would consider that in the future in calendar year 2024 or at some point. Now, if we as a council, now we can't bind future councils, but as a currently constituted council, if we know, you know, we don't really think that we want to bring that up, we don't really think that we want to deliberate that in the future, then in the staff and our informal conversations with residents, we could say, you know, it's not our intention at this time to deliberate that. Just wanted you to know that. And we could just kind of leave it at that. Now, if a future council decided, actually, we'd like to look at that, that's certainly their right. But I think if we decide that, you know, it's just not our intention to look at, we don't think we're going to look at that, then we can start sharing that basic expectation back with the community at this time. So we could just kind of get a sense of, hey, do we want to keep with the idea of telling people we are going to look at that again in the future, A, or B, you know, right now the tenor of the council is we don't think we're going to take a look at that. We're just going to kind of let it go and just communicate that informally. So if that is an okay question to ask, it's not an actual policy question. It's more just a do we want to consider looking at something in the future or not? I think it'd be... I would love to get just kind of a sense from you all about whether that is an okay thing to communicate informally to our friends in the community.
I would just speak to that and say I wouldn't mind communicating to them that we have no intention of forcing somebody to change their address. Now, whether the city decides to go out and want to put dual signs on the streets, and of course, somebody building new in the area, which there's not a lot of new building in the area, or somebody moves in the area and they want to take on a North Salt Lake address. My feelings are as if we can get Google Maps and anybody else that does that to have dual addresses in their database, that would work fine for me. And I think the area, and I don't know because I never got anybody to tell me, they couldn't remember, but the area that was east of Redwood or east of Orchard Drive that was annexed in the city, they all had Bountiful addresses. I think most of that area now has got North Salt Lake addresses, but nobody remembers how it happened because it didn't happen at the time of annexation. So I'm thinking, my personal thoughts there is let people know we're not going to force anybody to change their address. Because when I moved into the area, I have to get my mail delivered to a Bountiful address. I don't know about you, Ted. You have a Bountiful zip code?
No, I have a North Salt Lake zip code.
Yeah, see, I've got a Bountiful zip code. And, of course, we worked with
I'm a real North Salt Lake resident.
Huh? Well, my mailing address is a Bountiful one because they said that'd be better. And I was okay with that. My driver's license, though, says it's a North Salt Lake address. So I'm good with that.
I was born in Kenya, too.
And of course, when you apply for your driver's license, it wants your mailing address separate from your residential address.
Okay.
But if you're going to announce a candidacy for office, right, you have to put down your address. The address would be Bountiful. So then can you run for office with a Bountiful address?
So yes. just on this basic, this is just like a basic check-in. And am I hearing, and I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, no. But I'm hearing from you, Lisa, no, hey, we ought to consider that in the future. We ought to talk about it formally in the future. Stan, I'm hearing you say, you know, we don't necessarily need to talk about forcing an address change in a future council meeting. Natalie and Elisa, what do you think? And Mayor, what do you think?
We should absolutely talk about it in a future meeting. I think the discomfort and anger that exists for 1, 5, 10 years is considerable when weighed to the inconvenience and government inefficiency for a lifetime of managing a city with two cities' addresses.
And I think it should be explored. I'm just going to say, I think it should be explored, and I think it should be an agenda item and in a public meeting.
I just can't imagine why anyone would, in their right mind, would not want to live in North Salt Lake. So I think we should probably consider it because I'm sure they're all in their right mind.
Okay.
Once they get those new roads, they're going to be like, never mind.
Well, Mayor, do you have anything you want
to
add on that?
I just, I go back to the night we held the meeting over at Adelaide, and you know, there was a 98-year-old woman that came out of her home in tears, why are you doing this to me, you know, kind of thing. And so I get that, I don't understand, but I get the level of anxiety coming from it, and so I was comfortable, you know, letting it slide. If there's not a safety issue, if there's not a compelling reason, it needs to, at some point it should be addressed. But it doesn't have to be addressed this year or next year for that matter.
No, okay.
I just think to tell people, I don't think, my personal beliefs is that I don't think we should force people to change their address. Now, I think through nutrition it can happen, you know, and maybe they'll feel like they need to, but you know, if we put the street signs up as dual signs, and then we had Google Earth so you could put in either North Salt Lake or Bountiful.
Well, and I kind of feel like we shouldn't debate this right now. We shouldn't deliberate the details.
Sure.
All I just wanted to know is whether we feel like, hey, yeah, we need to have that conversation in the future, or okay. if we felt like, you know, let's let it go and not just have it, not firmly have that plan in the future. So I think that I've gotten the sense of you all.
Okay.
Thanks, Ted. Stan?
Well, I think I already made my remarks concerning Tunnel Springs Park and how how wonderful it was to be up there in the sunshine and the green space, and it was really nice.
And it's not tennis courts, huh?
Huh?
Good thing we're not turning into more tennis courts, huh?
Well, I don't know. It's really the green space, and the only thing that rubs me a little funny is that Salt Lake County, Salt Lake City put their signs up there and make it look like it was all their project. And I thought, maybe we should put some signs on our side of the fence and make a little statement. But and I thought, we don't need to do that. But, it is kind of what it is. So, anyway, that's...
Hopefully, we'll have Rocky to deal with it.
I was up there with Rocky Anderson when this whole thing started coming down. So.
Yeah. Natalie?
I am sorry because I know we want to get out of here fast, but I do have a really short story. And it is that 20 years ago, 18 years ago, I don't know how many years ago, when I was on the Planning Commission, was when Salt Lake City was trying to impose land restrictions on our 80 acres up there. And Mayor Anderson had a press conference at Library Square downtown, and I literally stood next to him holding a sign that said, "Don't take our land." And anytime he would say something, I was catcalling him. And it's one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. So about a year ago, I was walking down the street and I saw former Mayor Anderson in the window booth at a little Thai restaurant. And I went inside and apologized. And he didn't remember it, so I think maybe he gets catcalled a lot, but he accepted my apology. And then, I know, right? And I also just want to add, our section of Foxborough North has a real connection with the section of Woods Cross that's by the airport. When we first moved into Foxborough North, the OGs, we worshipped with them across Redwood. We were in their stake. Earlier this week, one of those Woods Cross residents was riding his bike on 2600, which is also 1100, and was hit by a truck. And I have a picture of his bike, but his bike literally is broken in half. Like, both the top and bottom part of the frame are broken. He did not sever his spinal cord, so they are actually really optimistic. And I don't know, maybe some of you know his family because his wife, Rebecca Jensen, teaches at Bountiful High. She's the chemistry teacher there. So it was her husband, Brandon. And so I just think we need to put the pedal to the metal when it comes to our bike lanes. And we need to think about all options, including barriers, extra signage, whatever we need to keep people safe. We've got a lot of people that maybe are North Salt Lake residents or maybe aren't, that come down 2600/1100 to get to the Legacy Trail. And we've also got a lot of big trucks. And so this is just a plea for us to, if we're doing that pilot program on Eagle Ridge, maybe we should do an additional one with barriers on 1100.
Thank you.
I have a few items just to let everyone know. Foxborough Elementary has scheduled with the golf course for their fifth grade field trip on May 17th at 10 a.m. at the golf course. Any of you are invited. I will be there, and none of you are expected to be there either, but the door is open. I wanted to say thank you to the city staff and to everyone that attended ULCT. I really enjoy going to those conferences, and I know that it takes a lot of behind-the-scenes work. But that is wonderful. Thank you for prioritizing that, city staff helping with that, because I just show up where I'm told, so thank you. And then the last thing is about the celebration events or the themed food truck nights. I just want to give an update. And as we talked about in our last council meeting, there are four that are proposed for this year, and I wanted to clarify the dates. The first will be June 12th, which will be the Juneteenth event, and deliberately the committee did not want that to be on June 19th because it's intended to be a small event, and we don't want to compete with larger events, so people can go to Ogden or can go to Salt Lake if they want to be a part of a large celebration. And then along those lines, I want to clarify, if you have any questions or get questions from residents about these events, is that they are not intended to be separate city events. They're meant to be themed food truck nights. So the food trucks are the event, and this is just a theme to add on top of that that will include some music, some decorations, and maybe a few vendors, but it is not a separate event that the city is doing. The second event is scheduled then for June 26th as the Pride event. The third one is in August, will be Pacific Islanders, and the fourth one will be in September, the end of September, for Hispanic or Latinx kind of celebration. And that's it.
Thank you.
I'm going to slowly walk around by everybody as other people are talking and show you the picture of this bike, because it's going to freak you out.
Jamie, do you have anything?
No, nothing to report.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for being here. The mayor's report, we had kind of a straw poll go out in Davis County and of who's going to raise taxes or have a truth in taxation. And I think there's about three or four cities so far that are considering it. I was approached by the Youth City Council. They want to do a service project at our garden. And I said, great, knock yourself out. Yeah, that can use some serious work on that. Arbor Day was unbelievable. I counted 101 people. Usually if we get 30, that's a good year. And it was just a great event. The highlight was when I introduced TJ O'Reilly. And I said, and by O'Reilly, I mean Riley. I was trying to make him a little more Irish than he already was, I guess. I don't know. I wanted to talk a little bit about upcoming spring cleanup. One of the early events when I first got on the council was a discussion about this, and we actually incorporated the second Saturday pickup and this fall and spring cleanups. And I'm getting a lot of interesting feedback. Some of it may be worth considering as we go forward. One of the things I get is that we do the fall cleanup way too early, and maybe even the spring one way early. And I don't know if that's true, or I know that people, you know, they rip out flowers and stuff at a certain time, and if we have that too early, they have to tear it out. But then if we get an early snow, it's too late. So something just to think about. I don't know the answer. The other feedback we get a lot is a lot of people don't have access to trucks or trailers. And I know there was a time in Salt Lake City where they came picked up off the curb. I don't know if they still do that. I don't know if that's feasible. But something, I'm just throwing that out as something else to consider. Since we haven't really addressed this for 14 years, you know. I do like the idea of the second Saturday pickup, though I'm one of the few people on my street that seems to do it, you know. So it may not be worth what we spend on that.
Can I just make a quick comment?
Yeah.
We lived in Salt Lake for a few years. I love being able for them to say, okay, start putting it on Thursday. We're going to come pick it up on Monday and bring your stuff out. And it's so efficient. It gives you a little bit of time to get things going. You don't need a truck. So I know a lot of people think it's really junky and trashy and that it ends up meaning you have to clean the streets an extra time. And it's probably a lot of work for public works, but I'm glad to hear that we're at least kind of considering that, because I think that is a more equitable way to do it for people in the community.
Well, I can say what we used to like about it as a family. We'd drive up on the hill and go, well, that looks like a really nice bike. Why are they throwing that out? Throw it in the back of the truck and on home. Fix it up.
So, yeah, well, David will never miss another meeting now after we have this discussion.
I'm going to make him listen to what you just said.
Yeah. Let's see. We talked about the Kite Festival already. The golf course open house is
the 11th.
May 11th.
Yeah. A week from Thursday. Yes.
May 17th.
11th.
May 11th.
May 11th.
The 11th.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm going to correct that in my book right now.
May 11th. Okay.
Yep. 5 o'clock to 9 o'clock.
And then just a couple of things that, again, I didn't know, but getting feedback from different residents. I didn't know that the Salt Lake, North Salt Lake crime rate was 20 times higher than Bountiful's. And probably, so we're probably 2 or 3 times higher than Chicago, I would guess. And then I didn't, and this is a great idea. We need to hire a summer intern to get the bridge on 1100 North built.
We did. We have an intern that can do it.
So that's...
You never know. Maybe the intern...
We wasted our time reaching out to senators and congressmen and UDOT and Union Pacific Railroad, and all we had to do was get that summer intern doing it. So
maybe the intern would do better than you and me. You never know.
Couldn't have done worse.
I mean, we're not exactly doing great.
Yeah.
So.
That's all I have. City manager report.
Yeah, thanks. My only item other than the golf course open house, and I would encourage you to make it between 5 and 9 up there at the golf course. We have a new, completely new grill crew. They're city employees. The food's really great. Justin Field is kind of a food artist. He's our kitchen manager. And so it's a really terrific operation up there. So we're hoping the building's done. And I'll apologize in advance. The parking lot will not be resurfaced by May 11th. We'll do that this summer after the open house, which is a little bit, maybe it's a little embarrassing for you. And I'm sorry that if it does embarrass you, because we have invited the county commission. We've invited the mayors of the 5 cities that we work with around here and some of the city managers I've sent the invite to, just because we want to have people come and enjoy that. It'll be an evening of food and music. We'll have some music, either a DJ or a live band.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
There's a ribbon cutting ceremony, right?
There is.
Do you want us to work that out?
So,
okay.
Let me get back to you on the ribbon cutting. We'll probably do that at maybe 5:30 or 6, whatever's convenient for you guys, but early in the evening we'll do a ribbon cutting. So I need to work that out with the mayor and with Tyler.
I apologize for having the wrong date. It is the correct date in my calendar, which we should probably repeat. Thursday, May 11th, from 5 to
9. Yes. We'll throw all the drunk people out at 9 o'clock. It'll be over at 9. The other item I was going to bring up, and I apologize, for, I probably started a firestorm today, but I didn't want to spring this addressing idea in the annexation area on the council without some advanced warning. So I got you thinking about it, and I apologize if it created some angst on some of your parts. So my plan was on March 16th to kind of give the council a full report on this. May 16th. Would that be something the council still wants to do in light of your discussion tonight? We'll put it on the agenda for the council to consider what you want to do. But maybe in light of what we've discussed tonight, we don't need to do that. This is what we wish to do on...
I'd say since what we said in the public hearing, I'd say we wouldn't want to talk about it any more than we already have.
So you want to leave it the way it is?
I would leave it the way it is, but...
No,
yeah, basically, nothing on an agenda to discuss it or set up a committee or anything.
So the only reason I've brought it up prematurely, or maybe I'm deviating from your previous instructions, is that we just have heard from a lot of people. There's a lot of people who have a lot of anxiety about this. Of course, we can leave it the way it is. We can even form the subcommittee as you directed. I was hoping we could let some steam out of the pressure cooker. But if we can't, then we'll just stay on track.
Well, I'd be okay if we put something on and we all voted on the fact that we're not going to force anybody to change their address. That might be good.
Yeah, I think what I heard tonight is that there is that you may want to change the addresses. And so maybe we should stay on course. And
my idea is
not to force anybody
to change their address, but to move forward with a gradual change. But that's just my thoughts.
That's
would kill us if we had two different addressing systems for the same street.
Where I live, I've got two different
addresses.
But it's for 7 houses, not for 150.
So back in 40 years ago, maybe, when the White City area of Sandy was incorporated in Sandy, they had street signs that said 300 East, old or traditional 100 East or something like that. And it was quite confusing, but I think it was the first step in
getting it done.
Get rid of the old address. I don't know.
I'm thinking, Ken, could we say this will be on the agenda in February 2024 or something like that?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. We've already said that. So.
Yeah. If we're all very clear on that, we're just not
it's on the agenda
even
in
talk.
February 2024.
Yeah, we just affirm what we had already talked about.
Yeah.
So.
And I'll just say, getting back to Ken's point, though, that just so the anxiety is still going to be there for
sure.
Another,
yeah.
Yep. You'll continue to hear from people. And well, that's okay.
I just think we could somehow put the word out that we're not going to force them to change.
But that's a policy decision.
Yeah.
Right.
We'd have to make a policy choice in order to be able to say that to people.
I understand.
Also, is there a way we can correct the address problem in Stan's neighborhood? Because it sounds like it's kind of confusing.
Doesn't bother me a bit. Except when Google Earth would not change it, and they kept sending people to Woods Cross. And they kept sending people to other places, and that bothered me. I think it's right now, but I'm not 100% sure. Example here is the pizza place up here on the highway, the Domino's delivers. Sorry, we don't service your area. What do you mean I'm 2 blocks from you? Well, according to our computer.
Yeah, we need to get that fixed.
We do.
I'm just saying that's kind of the way it's been.
I think having a really clear agenda item will be helpful because I think part of the concern for residents is they feel like decisions are being made with them not being aware.
Absolutely.
And so if we're very clear that we will not make any decisions until the state, but we will talk about it on the state plan to be here, it can help alleviate that fear of I have to constantly be vigilant or they're going to choose something before I start paying attention.
I love that.
So, but are you saying, so in May 16th, we put it on the agenda and say, we're talking about this on May 16th. We're not going to talk about it until February 24th, 2024, for any official position that we're taking. Is that what you mean?
If we need to put it on the agenda, I'm not sure we need to.
Is our position today.
Right.
I don't think we have to put anything on the agenda.
Okay.
We don't have to do anything.
Because
the message city staff and what you've been telling people is that, look, we're not changing addresses for at least 12 months until 2024. That's what we've already said to people.
And maybe the other thing that we just say informally or formally is, look, we're just going to do this very kind of transparently. We haven't deliberated it. We're not going to deliberate it until then. And we're going to involve the broader community. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be really neat discussion.
I don't think you need to add all that information. I think just saying we're not going to talk about it until that day.
Well, we've.
I just that mean is in what how we talk so, about it with people. That's all.
Yeah.
Sure. Of course. I just think you are exactly right that it's extensive and it's going to be a lot of deliberation. And I just think we should not start with a lot of deliberation.
Well, thank you for letting me. I'm sorry if it's caused some confusion. Well, thank you for letting me kind of air that and let you know that just that there's.
Well, can
there's
I say
some tension out there.
Just say one thing, what's going to happen is the people out there that are on the bandwagon, so to speak, they will be saying they're making the decision now, and then come January, first meeting in January, they're going to force us to change your address. That's what they're going to be telling everybody.
We could make that clear right now. This will not come into, we will not come into discussion until January 2024, and at that meeting, we will discuss and not vote. Yeah. And that can be our position at this
yeah.
point.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. Is we, somehow we got to
so,
crush what, that thought.
I think what we've said is that we were going to include some stakeholders, form a subcommittee,
right,
and meet between now and then.
Well, I would say we'll not between that. Now and then. I would say starting then, just because of the fact they think that we're making a decision.
All right.
Between now and then, and then come January 1, then we'll bring it to the public and the council will vote and it'll be done. So I would say we don't even bring it up or come into a discussion until next year.
Great.
And
can
Ted's
I ask
point
a question?
Was
sorry.
Valid.
Yeah.
So we'll have a new council.
We'll have a new council. They can discuss it. They can decide what they want to do, but I don't think we should plot ahead. They think we're plotting behind their back. And we're not, but that's why I'm thinking, let's not get stakeholders together and tell them.
Can I ask a question about that? Why are we getting stakeholders together? Why are we dealing with the question of whether or not addresses change with greater community involvement than whether or not the annexation happens? We didn't do that. We didn't do a committee or stakeholders for the annexation question.
Well, we kind of told them that
well,
during
that's what
the
we told
annexation
them we
process.
It was part of the motion initially. And if I can, I've just pulled it up. I'd love to read it. During that annexation meeting, it said Councilmember Porter amended his motion to include that the city would not take any action on the address changes before 2024 until a group of representatives from the city, the annexed area, and potentially the post office tax commission or others with an interest could make a recommendation to the city council if it should be required in the future. And that was the motion that was approved.
Okay, I would like to express a concern that those stakeholders, if they live only in that area, do not represent the entire decision-making criteria, which is the body of residents in North Salt Lake who probably don't want to sit on that committee, but whose best interests, I believe, are not served well in making that decision. So just a point of note.
Well, and I'll point out that this is representational government, and there are five people that can vote about it. Mm-hmm. And
they get to elect those yeah. three of them next election. So.
Sure. I feel concerned that what will be the messaging is that committee then makes the decision.
And I agree with you mostly. And where I think residents are coming from is that when they come into this room and we're sitting up here and it's a formal council meeting, they don't feel like this is an opportunity for them to quote unquote be at the table. And I just feel like if we just had some kind of step that is less formal before we sit down and formally deliberate, then we are meeting the spirit of that motion. So it could be an open house. We invite anybody who wants to come, we listen to them, and then we just do that before we have a formal deliberation. Something like that.
Anything else, Ken?
No, I think that wraps it up for me.
So I guess we need to adjourn council meeting and then open up the RDA meeting. So motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion, Mayor, to adjourn this city council meeting.